I'm giving away my podcast training for free. Do you want to see all my best podcasting tips to help you launch and grow your own successful show? Well, from now until May 1st, when you leave a glowing review for the Makeshift Happen podcast, you will be entered to win free access to my exclusive 3-hour podcast training taken straight from my business mastermind. This training is normally $197, but two lucky winners will get it for free just for leaving a review of the podcast. This is the ultimate shortcut to get your podcast up and running fast. Seriously, my clients have launched their shows in as little as 3 days after watching this training. We'll cover equipment, mics, cover art, hosting sites, getting approved on Apple, Spotify, and more, editing software, how to warm up your audience and launch a podcast properly, my top tips for growing the listenership of your show, how to post sound bites and episode previews to your Instagram, how I prepare for solo episodes, interviewing tips, how to pitch and land great guests, monetizing your show, and more. So here's how you can enter to win. Leave a 5-star rating for Makeshift Happen on Apple Podcasts and just write a quick review. It seriously does not have to be long. Just tell us what you love about the show or a favorite episode that you recommend. And this part is important. Make sure that you screenshot your written review before you press send. And then email that screenshot to us at info@samanthadaily.com. This is the only way that we can keep track of the reviews and make sure that we can contact you if you win. So for all of my entrepreneur girlies who know they want to start or grow their podcasts now or in the future, this one is for you. Go enter to win. And I can't wait to read your reviews. Love you. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the podcast. Today, I'm sitting down and I'm answering some questions about defining moments, authenticity online, legacy, success, my current fears, how I handle imposter syndrome, things that I'd like to change about myself, and so much more. So this is going to be a juicy solo episode. And all of these questions also make for really great journaling prompts or conversation questions for you and a partner or a bestie. So as you're listening, you might like to jot down these questions and then answer them later, either on your own in your journal or with a friend, someone that you just want to have a deeper conversation with. All right, so let's dig in. Welcome to the Makeshift Happen podcast. I'm your host, Samantha Daly, entrepreneur, life coach, and your no BS bestie, here to bring you all things mindset, manifestation, and personal development. This podcast is designed to help you expand your mind and up-level your life. So turn the volume up and roll the windows down if you're coming along for the ride. Let's go Makeshift Happen. Okay, the first question is about authenticity online, and it says, how do you stay true to yourself in a world that is constantly changing, especially in the online space? This is a really great question because I think we live in an age where we are consuming so much information more than we ever have before as humans, and it's definitely impacting our ability to stay true to ourselves, to be authentic, or even to just like stay in our own lane and feel confident in what we are doing, the path that we're taking. There's so much comparison. So I really think that what helps me stay grounded and stay true to who I am and able to show up authentically, even though everyone is always doing something different around me or trends are changing and this is the next big thing or this was, it was in, but now it's out. And to really just own who I am and what I want to do and where I'm going is confidence in who I am primarily, and also self-trust. So this is something that I talk about a lot. You've probably heard me say it before, but I often say that self-trust is my number one business strategy, but I also just think it's a life strategy, right? Having self-trust is the thing that is going to truly anchor you in and root you in to the truth of who you are and being able to stay on your path even when everyone else is doing something different or saying something different. It's going to help you stay true to who you are instead of constantly swaying to what's popular online or what other people are saying or people's opinions or what your family or friends or influencers think you should be doing and all of that. So building confidence and self-trust is so important. And this is something that I think we really need to implement in schools and and it needs to become part of education. There is just not enough education as it stands for younger people around their inner dialogue, self-belief, affirmations, and all of these things that really, as adults, a lot of us have had the fortunate ability to be able to learn, whether it's through podcasts or books or programs or whatever, that we know has the power to change our lives. So staying true to yourself in a world that's constantly changing, I think primarily comes down to, have you built the self-confidence in who you are? And do you have self-trust to be able to honor what you know and what's true for you, regardless of what's happening in the external? And obviously a big part of being able to do any of this is intuition. Like, are you connected to your intuition? Do you know what it's trying to tell you? Do you know what it feels like when you have an intuitive yes or an intuitive no? Have you practiced building a relationship with your intuition where when you know something is right or when you know something is wrong, you actually just follow that knowing and you act upon it and you create change in your life, even when it doesn't make the most sense, or maybe there's not a clear path or a clear reason why, or you don't know what the ROI on something is going to be yet, but you feel the intuitive knowing? Have you built that relationship where you can follow your gut and understand that your intuition is always leading you somewhere on purpose and it's never on accident? If you are disconnected from your intuition, you are going to be the best person for people to convince, sway, manipulate. Like, that's so huge. You can't manipulate people that are connected to their intuition. When someone shows up in a room and you're an intuitive being and you can tell that their energy is off or that their intentions are bad or that they're actively trying to manipulate people or they're putting on a facade, like, intuitive people you can't pull the wool over their eyes. And so I think a really big part of being able to stay true to who you are, regardless of the environment, whether that's online or in the real world, is having that connection to your intuition, which is why it's so, so important. And so much of what goes on in the world today, whether it's through media or through toxins and our diet, like, all of this stuff is really intelligently designed to detach us and take us away from our intuition, because as a society, we are more easily divided and manipulated when we are not connected to the truth of what we know. And a lot of times what we know is not because we've learned it in a book or because it's scientific fact yet, but it's a remembering. It's a remembering of something that's true for you. It's an instinct that we have as animals that we cannot explain. And because we are such linear thinkers oftentimes, and we do appreciate our ability as humans to be logical and scientific and all of that, there's a version of us that wants everything to fit into that box. It wants everything to fit into the box of, yes, this makes perfect sense, or this has been diligently studied and researched, so therefore, right? There is that side of us, but there's also this animalistic, you know, magical, spiritual, intuitive side of us that cannot be explained. And if you're trying to fit your intuition into the box of logic, then you're always going to be disconnected from it. And that's going to create more disconnection between you and your path, your purpose, your destiny, and ultimately your potential. Because I do think that we need to follow those intuitive pings in order to be able to reach our fullest potential in this lifetime. So those are the main things that I would say in terms of staying true to yourself in a world that is constantly changing. Have you ever faced a major challenge or setback, and how did you overcome it? Okay, of course. And if you're listening to this, I'm sure you're thinking, yep, I've got several that I could talk about right now. I think we've all faced major challenges or setbacks at some point in our life. So a couple of the ones that just come to mind for me are when I was living in Spain and I was working for an influencer, helping plan and manage her retreats. And I was kind of doing, it was almost like a virtual assistant type work, but it was a dream job for me at the time because I wanted to get away from teaching English in the schools and I wanted to do something that felt more purposeful and that was more in alignment with my values. And at the time, I was really in love with personal development and yoga and mindset and manifestation. And that was, her work was really centered around all of those pillars. And so it felt like such a dream to be able to work with someone who was building a company and a mission and hosting retreats that were centered around those things. And so I was really excited to be able to have that opportunity and have that job. And I was not making good money at all, but it was a dream job from the perspective of like, it felt like a step in the right direction of, oh, this is going to bring me closer. It's going to open doors. I'm going to have more opportunities, hopefully, after this in this line of work. And I really was just so excited to be doing something that mattered and that I gave a shit about, right? And so it felt like a dream job to me, but I unexpectedly got fired from that job. And we've detailed this whole story on the podcast before. So if you want to search for it, I think it's called The One Where I Got Fired. But that time kind of comes up for me when I think about major challenges or setbacks, because it felt like previously, you know, it felt like, wow, I'm finally on the right path. I'm moving in the right direction. This is really going to help me go where I'm meant to go. And then to have it ripped away so quickly and unexpectedly the way that it was just very confusing and jarring. And it made me question a lot of, you know, this whole narrative that I had been really believing and preaching up to that point of like, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, the universe is always conspiring in your favor. And I had just read the book, The Universe Has Your Back. And all of that felt really, really true for me in the lead up to getting this job. Like prior to getting this dream role, when I was working in a really soul-sucking, toxic job at an English teaching academy in Madrid, I followed all of that guidance. I asked for the signs. I received them. And everything was pointing to like, okay, leave this job. Even though you don't have a backup plan, it's going to be okay. You're going to be held. You're going to be taken care of. And so I was unemployed for a little while, but then I got this job. And so I was like, wow, that was so true. Like the universe really was conspiring in my favor and everything was working out for me. And oh my God, look at this now. Like this is amazing. But then I got fired. Right. And so it really flipped everything on its head for me and kind of made me start to question like, was everything that I was believing spiritually up to this point, was that true or was that all just kind of like a fantasy? But of course, we know that me getting fired was the catalyst to then being brave enough and kind of having that moment of the universe pushing me out of the nest and forcing me to fly that allowed me to really start to get serious about, well, maybe I want to do something of my own that is in alignment with my passions. And, you know, maybe I could create my own job that is really purposeful to me and is mission driven and is heart-centered. And that was the catalyst to me building my own business, which completely changed my whole fucking life. So it's interesting how even though sometimes we learn those things of like, okay, I know things are working out for me, a new challenge or setback can come along that makes you question like, how could this be working out for me? But then in retrospect, when we're looking back, the dots always connect and we're always able to find that. But it is frustrating in the moments when you can't see that yet. And so I think in that moment, like, how did I overcome it? When I was fired and I was living in a foreign country and I had quit all of my other jobs and kind of burned the bridges. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, what am I going to do now? Like, I'm not even in my own country where I can just go get any odd job. Like, my options are really kind of limited here. There was no other choice but to just lean on the faith. You know, like some of those beliefs and spirituality were like being questioned a little bit, but I had two options. It was like, oh, believe everything is a hoax and the world is against me and none of this was real. And see, I knew it wasn't going to work out. And what a load of bullshit. Or to be like, maybe because this has been true for me once, it could be true for me again. And maybe there's something for me to learn. And maybe there's something bigger on the horizon. And those were the options. So of those two options, I knew that one of them was going to make me a cynical, pessimistic, unhappy person. And the other one was potentially going to lead me somewhere beautiful. And at least along the way, I would have faith and optimism. And so I obviously chose the second version of that. And I think that is a choice that we make every day, right? You don't have to have the rug pulled out from under you or have a major challenge or a setback to realize that you are always faced with those two choices. You've always got A and B. Like, I can believe that the world is out to get me and I can become cynical and I can become negative and I can have this downward outlook on things, or I can choose to believe that the opposite is true, that things are working out for me and that this pain will have a purpose and, you know, that the hard things in my life will get alchemized and that there are purposeful things waiting for me and there are better days ahead. And there is some being, some God, universe, source, something that loves me and is guiding me and is holding me through this. You get to choose every single day what you want to believe. And I always say this, like, I don't really think the truth matters. Like, I don't think it's my job to find out the truth. I'll know the truth when I die and I transcend and I go wherever we go, and I return to my state of being a spiritual being that is all knowing. Like, at some point we will know, but at that point it won't matter, right? The only thing that will matter is how you lived in this one lifetime, in this one body, and the opportunity that you had. And so I'm always going to choose the faith option. I'm always going to choose the optimistic option. And sometimes it's easier said than done. It's not that it's a simple choice, but it's a continuous practice every day to lean into faith rather than fear, right? And so that's really how I navigated that situation in my life. I reached back out to people that I had worked with in the past for, you know, being an English teacher in the Spanish schools. And I got myself another job, which, you know, it felt like, okay, I'm going backwards. I have to go back to teaching. I have to go back to being in the schools. I'm not going to be doing work that is in alignment with my passion or my purpose. But I decided that while I was doing that, I was also going to work on my business. I was also going to start putting meaningful things out into the world. And I didn't even know what, I didn't call it my business at the time, because I didn't know that it was going to become a business. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just decided, like, if I have to get this job and kind of go backwards per se in order to survive and make money, at least simultaneously, I'm going to be doing everything that I can to stay in my passion and in my purpose. So I'm going to be blogging, I'm going to be writing, I'm going to be sharing on social, and I'm going to be creating resources and just trying to create something, you know? The other challenge or setback that comes to mind when I think about this question is when we were wanting to move back home to the US. So I had lived in Spain for 5 or 6 years at this point, and I really started to get the nudge of like wanting to move back home to the US. But it was very challenging because it was the worst time ever to decide that I wanted to do this, because it was still like pandemic time. So borders were closed for the most part. Vaccine passports were still mandatory at that time. Foreigners were not being allowed into the US. So I knew that it was going to be really hard to get my partner back here. And we obviously wanted to move together. Like, it wasn't like I just wanted to leave Spain and abandon everything. It was like we wanted to move our life from Spain to the US, including our 80-pound husky who needed to get on a plane. And they were no longer allowing emotional support animals on the planes. And so there were just so many hurdles and so many things that were in our way of getting where we wanted to go and doing what we wanted to do. So that was definitely a major challenge. There were a lot of tears, a lot of surrendering to the unknown. There was a lot of hoping and pushing and believing, and then like surrendering and being like, okay, we don't need it. Maybe we'll just stay here. Like, we went back and forth so many times because it just felt so big and so impossible. But at the end of the day, the universe, of course, conspired in our favor and lined up so many incredible favors and truly miracles that allowed us to make that journey safely. And I'll never forget, like, I looked out the plane window when we were landing in the US and I just started bawling my eyes out. I was like listening to worship music because I was just like trying to hold it together. Like, please let this be real. Let us pass through all the controls. Like, you know, let everything be okay with the dog and with our passports. And I'm just like, please, like, let this be real. And I just remember looking out the window and just like seeing, it was nighttime. So it was just like city lights. And, you know, I was just like, wow, like everything that had to happen in order for this to be possible, which I don't know if I'll ever be able to talk about all the details of what that was, but it was just like, wow, like this, miracles really, really are real. And I just felt so much gratitude. And so again, like, how did I overcome that challenge or setback? It was faith. It was the process of manifestation, really. You know, it was figuring out what we wanted, what it was going to take. It was calling people, asking for favors, connecting with community, you know, working out the logistics, taking all the aligned action steps that we had in our control, and then surrendering so much of it over to luck and magic, honestly. And so, yeah, those are a couple of the challenges or setbacks that come to mind when I think of this question. And I think in both scenarios, what really got me through it was faith and aligned action and just continuing to put one foot in front of the other and believe. Have you ever felt pressure to portray a certain image online that wasn't entirely authentic? And how did you navigate that? Ooh, this is a big question. And I think for anyone listening that has a presence online, you're building a business or you're a content creator or an influencer of some kind, or you know, you use social media to help generate income in whatever way, shape, or form. Like if you have an online presence, I think you can relate to this idea of like, sometimes there's a line between maintaining authority and like showing the vulnerability. And this is a fine line. I've had so many clients ask me questions about this. I know it's a question for so many people of like, how do I still make sure that people see me in the right way so that they trust me and so that they, you know, feel safe working with me. But also I want to be really transparent and I want to be vulnerable and I am a human and I have challenges, but like, where do I draw the line? Like how much is too much? How much is not enough? And I think that's a balance that a lot of online content creators, influencers, business owners are trying to walk. And it is very real. And I think there's been, you know, times in all of our journeys where we felt like we need to put on a brave face for our community, even when, you know, we might be going through personal challenges or having some sort of like existential crisis over like what's next for you or where you see your career or your business going, or you're just in a state of confusion, or maybe something is happening behind the scenes in your life or in your relationship, or you're grieving, or I don't know, you just have like question marks about things and you're just like, feels like I have to show up one way, but how I'm actually feeling is another way, you know, and this is something that I also experience and it is a challenge. But I think what has helped is that I have been intentional about never creating like a character per se that I felt like I had to play online, or like a character that I feel like that makes me become stuck playing one specific version of me, right? Because when people are a character or a version of themselves, it doesn't mean that they're inauthentic. It's just that you're seeing one side of who they are, but they are so multifaceted and they have so many other sides. So just listening to an interview recently with JoJo Siwa, and she was kind of talking about how her real name is Joelle, but her online personality that has been in the spotlight since she was a 9-year-old girl is this JoJo character. And sometimes when she's been in relationships, her partners have been like, oh, like, I just like the Joelle version of you. And like, I can't wait until like, you know, you're done working so that we can go back to like just being your real self. And she's like, but the Joelle version of me, the like casual, you know, in sweatpants at home version of me is not the only authentic me. Like the JoJo performative, expressive, loud, crazy, wild, silly version of me is also a very real version of me. And that is also an authentic expression, right? So it's not just like I'm one personality or I'm the other. We're so multifaceted. And so I think sometimes what happens, honestly, accidentally, is people get stuck playing that one version of themselves. And it becomes this character that the world knows them for and sees them as. And because the world has never seen those other sides, then they become shocked if that individual decides to pull back from that one character that they've always presented as. Or if they start to show one of these other sides that is unknown to the world, they're like, oh, you're changing, or who are you, or that's not the real you, or this is inauthentic. When in reality, it's just like, no, you just never saw that side of me before, you know? And so I think what's helped me not get stuck is I don't feel like I've created a character per se that I felt like I had to continuously play, or that I only have like one version of me that's accepted by my community or by my online audience, and that's all that they want from me. And if I were to show up in a different way, they would be turned off or think that I'm being inauthentic. So if you are building especially a personal brand of some kind, I do think that there's value in having some width and variety to the versions that you allow yourself to show up as online, so that you don't get stuck pigeonholed in like this one character. Like you don't want to always have to be the motivational gal or the happy person or the inspiring person. Like you want people to see these other facets of your life and the different sides of you, so that when you're naturally feeling that way, it still comes across as authentic if you were to show up and it's not, you're not creating like a false expectation of how people want to see you, when in reality, there's so many different sides to all of us. So yeah, hopefully that answers that question. What's something that you've recently learned about yourself that surprised you? Okay. I have been thinking a lot recently about how my mindset has shifted a lot around this idea of like being the breadwinner in the family or in your partnership as a woman. And I actually think this is a collective shift, because we went so hard into like the women's empowerment to the point where a lot of us were like, yes, we are so believing that we needed to do everything exactly the same as men and do everything that men can do and do it in the same way that men do it. And look at me, I don't need no man. And I'm going to do everything on my own because now I'm able to. And then a lot of us women like went so hard in the paint with that, that we like kind of burnt ourselves out. And then we were like, huh, I don't know if like that is actually... like I thought that that's what I wanted, but like now that I've done it and I've done the girl boss thing, or I've done the corporate ladder thing, or I've done the, you know, breadwinner entrepreneur thing, like I don't know if that's really like what I want to do forever. And I don't know if that's what's like really fulfilling me the most. And maybe I just wanted to prove to myself that I could do it. But now that I've done it, I'm almost like okay with the fact that maybe I don't need to take on that role. And this is a delicate conversation because people get all up in arms about feminism and, you know, women being equal. And like, yes, we are equal and we should have the right and be able to do whatever we want to do and also do whatever men do. Absolutely 100%. All I'm saying is, for me personally, I've kind of had a revelation of like, I don't like being the breadwinner. I don't like being the provider for the family. It's actually too much pressure for me. It doesn't feel good for my nervous system and I don't like it. And it kind of stifles my creativity and I just don't like it. And growing up, I always thought, you know, I want to be this, like, even before girl boss was like ever a thing or boss babe was ever like a word, like growing up, like I do believe that it was a societal narrative that taught us, like, you know, don't depend on someone and go after your goals and create the kind of life that you want to live. And that is a beautiful message. And I'm so glad that I received it, because I think that's part of what empowered me to build my own business and become an entrepreneur and do all the things that I'm doing in my life now. But it's just funny looking back how I really genuinely thought like, oh, I want to be this like powerful, like corporate girly or boss babe of some kind. And I want to make all my own money and never depend on a man. And now I'm 30 and I'm like, no, I do though. I do want to depend on a man. Like, I do want you to pay for things for me. Like, I do want to have us both be making great money, or you be making more money. Like, that would be awesome. I think that would be really lovely and supportive for my nervous system to not feel like the pressure is on me. And I know there's been this recent trend on social media of like, social media isn't real. Here are some things that I'm struggling with. While some of those posts have felt kind of like opportunistic and performative, there's others that have been really lovely to kind of read and be like, wow, yeah, like I see myself in that. And it's so interesting to see other people are struggling with similar things as you. And what I found really fascinating was a lot of, you know, the high level entrepreneurs that are peers or friends or people that I follow in the space, there was a really similar sentiment in a lot of those posts about feeling the pressure of being the one who makes all the money, especially for the female entrepreneurs or coaches who their partners were, they were also, you know, salaried members of their company, right? Like they shared, I saw several of them that like that weight actually feels really heavy a lot of the time. And even though their businesses are thriving and doing well and continuing to make money, like, I don't know, it's like this energetic thing that I think is unnatural for women to be the provider of a household. And it feels, you know, we're just different than men in that way. And it's something that feels really good for men and really empowering for men. For women, sometimes, not for all of us, but for some of us, it just feels kind of heavy and it just doesn't feel good. So that's something that I've learned about myself recently that did truly surprise me, because when I was younger, like I said, I was all in on the, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna just you know, do my thing and earn all my money and like I don't need anybody. And I do think that it's important to have some level of independence, especially financial independence for women is so important so that you don't get stuck in dangerous relationship situations or toxic or abusive relationships. Like, please just like, you know, use your brain and understand that there is so much context to these conversations. So you know what I am saying and you also know what I'm not saying. So don't make it mean something that it doesn't. But yeah, that surprised me of like, oh, I don't actually like this as much as I thought that I would. I actually quite dislike it, to be honest. So yeah. Another thing is like, maybe this would be different if I worked in a traditional job where I worked in corporate. I just think that there's like enough pressure with entrepreneurship specifically as is. You know, I can go to a job if I worked in corporate and maybe my performance isn't 100% every single day, or I have a bad week, or I, you know, my productivity isn't on point that week, but I'm still going to get paid the same. But that's not true for entrepreneurship. If your energy isn't up to par, if your productivity isn't up to par, you're not going to be making sales. People aren't jumping in. You're not making money. So there's a different, I think there's a little bit more like wiggle room and leeway in the corporate space. Not to say that corporate jobs or any other type of job isn't also wildly stressful. I totally believe that. And I think there's parts of traditional jobs that are more stressful, obviously, than entrepreneurship, because at least with entrepreneurship, you can work from home or, you know, wear whatever you want or be really comfortable, and you get to choose the people that you work with, and you don't have, you know, really mean, nasty customers and clients because you, of course, don't choose to work with those people. So it's a give and a take, but I haven't had that experience of like working at a high level in corporate to know whether this is true or not. But I feel like there's a level of pressure that comes with entrepreneurship that is unique to being, you know, a business owner, because all of the revenue depends on you. It depends on your output. It depends on your energetic capacity to show up, to be productive, to be on point, to just be effective in your sales. Like, that's already kind of like heavy. And so then you like add that to, oh, now you're responsible for like taking care of your family and earning all the money or paying the bills or whatever. And that's just kind of like, it's a bit too much, at least for me, right? I obviously can't speak for everybody, but anyway, that's my two cents on that. Something else that I've learned about myself recently that surprised me is that I really do want to get married and become a mom. And this for me has always felt kind of far away until recently. And I've talked about this with some of my friends, but I'm like, I'm having so many thoughts and it's freaking me out. I'm having so many more thoughts about like marriage and kids, like involuntarily. Like, I'm thinking so much about motherhood and what it means to be a mom and the journey to become a mom and the timeline to become a mom and like all these things that I honestly did not used to stress about or worry about at all. And it's weird because like I want all of that, but also so it makes sense why I'm having more thoughts about it. But at the same time, like I still don't really feel like it's the best time for us. Like I still don't really feel like it's now. So it's not like I'm in that place that, you know, some women get to where they're like, I want that now. Like I want a ring. I want to get married. Like I want to get pregnant. Like, come on, like, let's go. Like, I really want this now. It's not really that. So it's weird. Like, I don't feel like it's the best time or the right time, but also like the right time is a lie. I know that. I'm the first one to always remind everybody else, ready is a lie. But yeah, I just really don't feel like it's the best time, but I am having more of those thoughts and it's kind of freaking me out, to be honest. But that's something that I've learned about myself recently is like, oh shoot, like, yeah, I really do want those things. I guess they are really important to me. And maybe they're coming faster than I thought. I don't know. But that's that, just transparently, vulnerably. That's where I'm at with that. What is your go-to self-care ritual when you are feeling overwhelmed or drained? Okay, I like, maybe you're expecting me to have something really complicated of, you know, like jump up and down, do a dance party, meditate, journal, get a psychic reading, like, I don't know. But for me, honestly, if I feel like I'm overwhelmed or drained, there are just a couple of like things, and it comes down to like basic needs. Right? There's just a couple of things that I know that I need to do in order to help myself. The first thing is turn off my fucking phone. Half the time, the reason why you are comparing, you feel sad, you're overwhelmed, you're drained, you're upset that you weren't productive enough. Like, most of our problems are coming from our phones or technology in general. So if you can just literally unplug everything, your life will get better in the next couple of hours. So if I'm feeling overwhelmed or drained, I know I'm turning my phone off. And I turn my phone off every single night, which I think is already pretty good. So at a certain point in the evening when I'm like, okay, I just want to make dinner, eat, relax, and sleep, I will just completely turn my phone fucking off, or else it's a demon. Like, there's no other way. So I have to turn my phone off. The other thing that really helps me is like going for a walk with the dog and just getting outside. That usually helps me process my thoughts, especially if I'm doing like a non-stimulation walk where I'm not listening to music or a podcast or anything. But sometimes, depending on my mood, if I just need like some keep me company content, or if I'm like kind of sad or like down a little bit, like sometimes it does help to have just one of those podcasts or someone that you enjoy listening to that feels comforting, and to go on a walk and just like have that as your little like companion. So that's something that I might do. And then the most important thing is resting, napping, or getting a good night's sleep, because sleep will change your life. It'll change your mood. It'll change everything. We've all experienced this before. Like, you're in one mindset and then the next morning you're like, wow, I feel so much different, or I feel so much better. Or you had a crazy argument the night before and then you wake up and you're like, oh my God, why did I say that? Why did I do that? Like, I don't feel that way. I actually am so much more clear. I'm so much more refreshed. Like, I have a totally different perspective than how I felt about it yesterday. Like, sleep just literally heals your life, I swear. So getting good sleep is so important, especially if you're overwhelmed or drained. So nothing too complex or crazy here, just, you know, getting away from technology, going for a walk, and sleeping. You often talk about overcoming fear, but do you ever still feel afraid? And how do you manage fear when it arises? Okay, I mean, yes, of course I feel afraid. Everybody feels afraid. I think that's something that we need to normalize. Like, you don't just conquer fear and never experience it again. Like, random life fears, obviously I have, but I think we're talking more about like personal development things and stuff like that. But like, of course, I'm afraid walking down the street at night that someone's randomly gonna jump out and stab me. Like, why? Why is that a common fear as women? I don't know. It's unfortunate that we live in an unsafe world and that has to be a fear of ours. But like, yeah, there's things that I'm scared of every fucking day with no reason to be. But yeah, of course I feel afraid. But to take more of like a esoterical approach to this question, and talk about maybe some of the things that I'm afraid of right now and kind of unpack it. I think right now, to go back to this idea of like, you know, wanting to become a mom and marriage and that stuff, because I'm having so many more of these thoughts, I think right now I'm afraid that when I become a mom, if I become a mom, hopefully, I pray to God that I'll be able to become a mom. I think I'm afraid that like when I become a mom, I'll never want to work again. Like, for some reason, I just feel that in my bones, that like the minute I have a baby, I'm gonna be like, it's over. Like, no desire. I like could care less about work. Like, I just don't even, who cares? I just wanna be here. Like, I just wanna stay home with my babies. Like, I could totally picture me doing that. And the reason why that scares me is because financially, I'm like, shoot, like, I can't afford to do that. Like, I can't afford to just never work again as soon as I have a baby. Like, what? So that's one of my, maybe it's irrational. I was going to call it an irrational fear, but like also maybe that's real. Like, maybe that's not so irrational. But how do I handle it? I think most things that we are afraid of are much bigger in our imagination than in reality. And so oftentimes the anticipation of what something will be like is way worse than what it actually is once you do it or once it happens. And so I'm just always kind of reminding myself of that. There's no way, and you can relate this to business, motherhood, like literally anything. I think a lot of us get into this place where we want to have all the future steps figured out so that we can feel safe enough going into that next season or that next big risk or that next big step in our lives. I see this all the time with my clients that are early on in their businesses. They're like, but I don't know how this is going to happen and what this is going to look like and how much money I'll be making and if it's safe. And that prevents them from starting the business. In the same way that for myself, trying to figure out how I'm going to manage a business, take care of my clients, still feel inspired, have enough energy and time and sleep to show up before I become a mom, like, if I need all the answers to those questions before I just do it, then I'm probably going to be waiting forever. Like, and I know this to be true. So it's not that my fear goes away, but it's just that I understand how fears work, and I know that the anticipation is oftentimes so much worse than what it actually is once we do it. And I also know that usually once you take step one, some new knowledge or wisdom or path opens for you to be able to see, oh, here's a possibility, and I'll do that as step two. And then once you do step two, the heavens open and they send you step three, and you're like, oh, well, okay, maybe that would make sense. And so it comes back to faith and trust of like, if I were to become a mom tomorrow, obviously I would be shook to my core and I would have no fucking idea what I'm doing, and I would be completely overwhelmed and my business would be unprepared and like everything would feel scary and uncertain and awful. And also, I just believe deep in my core that I would figure it out and that I would make it work. And that brings us back to what I talked about earlier of like the self-trust and having the confidence and self-belief. Like if you have those ingredients, you can do anything. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have doubt. It doesn't mean that you're not going to have fear. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be like, well, this is horrible timing and like, what the fuck? But if you hold the belief that you'll be able to figure it out no matter what, that will get you through whatever it is that you're facing. So I also know that there is no cure to fear other than action. Action is the antidote to fear. So if I don't want to be afraid of motherhood or what it might do to my motivation or my business, then I probably just need to walk in faith until I become a mom, and then things will make sense. So I just lean into the belief that I will always be okay and I'll always be taken care of, and that I am smart enough and resourceful enough and confident enough, and I have enough self-belief to be able to turn things around and figure out a plan for what to do next, no matter where I find myself. I think if you have that, you'll always be okay to some extent. Give an example of a time when taking a big risk paid off in unexpected ways. Oh my God, there are so many. Where do we even start? How long do we want this episode to be? But I was actually talking about this not that long ago on my Instagram stories, and I got a lot of you replying saying, thank you so much. Like, people need to know this. I needed to hear this. All the things. So I'm like, okay, let's talk about this more. Big risks that pay off in unexpected ways. I think the biggest risks often are those ones that have this kind of like mega, almost infinite ROI that you had no idea was coming. So examples that come to mind for me are when I studied abroad alone in a foreign country, no friends, didn't go with anyone from my school. Like, I went alone, and I decided to live with a host family who spoke a language that I was still learning and didn't know how to communicate in at 21 years old. I'm like, yeah, sign me up. I'm going to go live in another country, live with these people that I can barely talk to, and I don't know anybody, and I don't have any friends, and hopefully, you know, this is going to be a great time. It actually did turn out to be the best time of my life, and that's obviously the trip that I met Jaime on. So it impacted me in infinite ways, and the ROI is actually kind of crazy and endless just to even think about that. But then later, the following year, when I was 22, another big risk decision was, you know, once I had left Spain and gone back to the States to finish my degree and everything, I had to decide, am I going to go and take this job in Chicago and start my career, or am I going to try to like make this long distance relationship work with this guy that I just met? And like, you know, we obviously love each other, but like, we also kind of barely know each other, you know, like we've hung out for like a couple of months, but like, we live in two different countries. We're so young. Like, what is the point? Like, what, how is this going to work out? Like, should I really be putting all my eggs in this basket? Is it worth abandoning the degree that I, you know, just spent so much money getting, and this job offer that I got that I'm so proud of? Like, that was very confusing. But of course, as we know, the story goes, I declined my corporate job offers and I moved back to Spain indefinitely for the guy that I met on a dating app. Just, you know, was like full fuck it vibes. That was a huge risk. And it, again, paid off in infinite ways that I would have never, ever, ever, ever been able to see on the front end of that decision. And so this again goes back to the idea of like intuition and being able to follow your gut. And what I shared on stories the other day was like, sometimes doing things simply because you want to or because you feel like it is a good enough reason. It is a good enough reason, but the world and logic and linear thinking will try to convince you that that's not enough, that you need to know why and you need to know how it's going to serve you and what you're going to get from it and where exactly it's going to deliver you to. And you need to know that you can guarantee that it's going to be worth it before you make the decision. And that's not how life works. It's especially not how magic and miracles work, right? Doing things simply because you want to and because it feels right is enough of a reason. And there's so many other times in my life where I took those kind of blind risks with no idea, you know, what the ROI was going to be. But then, of course, they paid off in unexpected, infinite ways. I think the other one that I talked about earlier was like when I got fired from that dream job in 2018. And then I took a huge risk to like start my own thing, having no fucking, I didn't even know that I was going to be a coach at that point. I was just doing shit, you guys. I was just writing stuff, blogging, providing value, like trying to help people, making ebooks, like recording meditations, going live on Instagram. I was just fucking doing anything. I didn't know what that was going to turn into, but I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad that I took the risk. I'm glad that I put myself out there. I'm glad that I didn't allow the idea of, oh, what are these people going to think that follow me from high school and college? Like they're going to judge me. I'm so glad that I didn't let that hold me back because I didn't know what the ROI was, but it turned out the ROI was a 7-figure business and so many of my dreams coming true and, you know, being able to live in a beautiful home on the beach, like in my dream location, like just so many things that I couldn't have even fathomed. Also the time that I invested $20,000 into my first ever like high-level business mastermind. I had only been in business for about a year. It was in the pandemic and I was getting traction, but I wasn't like at the 6-figure mark or anything like that yet. And so that felt like a thing that, you know, was kind of nonsensical. Like $20,000 is a lot of money, you know? And I was still very new in business and I could have easily told myself these stories of like, well, I need to learn more and I need to refine more and I need to make more money first and I need to prove myself more. And like, I'd love to do that, but I'll do that someday when I'm further along. And I was just like, no, like I need to do that now because that's going to be the thing that gets me further along. And yeah, that, I mean, it seemed probably stupid to anyone else that I would have told that I did that to, which is probably why I didn't tell anyone. Because I was like, I actually don't need your input. I just have the self-trust and the courage and the inner knowing to know that this is the next step in my path. And I just did it. And I had so much growth that year, scaled to multiple 6 figures. I met incredible people that are still to this day in my life in an intimate way, impacting me, some really dear friends, some really close mentors. And yeah, the coach that I joined that mastermind with is who I'm going to Egypt with coming up on this beautiful pilgrimage. And I'm going to get to meet so many other amazing 7- and 8-figure business owners and do this like bucket list once in a lifetime journey. And so it's still paying off. And that's what I mean by like infinite ROI. It's not just that I grew my business and that I scaled and that I got more clients and that I learned how to launch and that I hired my first assistants and, you know, really expanded my business in a ton of ways, but it was like, I grew as a person fundamentally. I grew spiritually. I made connections. I built relationships. There are friendships that have flourished and that continue to pour into my life to this day. There's a relationship with a mentor that is still active in my life and providing me new and exciting ways to grow. Like, yeah, the big risks that don't make sense oftentimes turn out to be the most infinite ROIs and the things that you could have never, ever, ever expected that would still be benefiting you in your life years down the road. So yes, take the risk. Is there a decision that you made looking back that completely altered the course of your life or career? Yeah, I think all of the things that I just mentioned are examples of decisions that I made that completely altered the course of my life and my career. Absolutely. But I also think about just like stupid little decisions. Like if you guys have heard of the butterfly effect, it's like the one small choice that you make that then ripples out and has this like really big overarching extending effect on your life. And I did an Instagram reel about this recently because my butterfly effect is choosing to study Spanish in 7th grade, which was so random. Like, I was so young. I was probably 12 or 13 years old. And we were told that it was mandatory to study a foreign language for a certain number of years in school. And if they said it was optional, I wouldn't have done it. Like, I didn't want to learn a foreign language. I just felt like, oh, it's going to be too hard. I don't want to do it. And we had three options. We could take French, we could take Spanish, or we could take Latin, which I guess Latin would make sense if you wanted to go into like medicine or you wanted it to like understand more of the roots of those words for science. But Latin was immediately out for me because I'm like, no one even speaks Latin. Like, what the fuck? Like, who cares? So it was between Spanish and French. And I had heard that Spanish was easier than French. So I was just like, okay, fuck it. I guess I'm studying Spanish. And you had to put in your preferences. It wasn't even like you got to choose. Like, you just had to share like the order of your preference. And so I put Spanish first and then French and then Latin. And by some stroke of luck, I got my first choice. And so I was thrown into Spanish classes. But as we know, like, if I hadn't made that choice, then I wouldn't have discovered that, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this. And maybe this is a skill that I want to continue to foster. And so I wouldn't have continued to study Spanish throughout my years in high school and then in college. And I wouldn't have studied abroad and I would have never met my partner. And like, so many things would have never transpired in my life had that one tiny puzzle piece not happened the way that it did. And this is called the butterfly effect. But I also think if you are a Taylor Swift fan, you're like, it's the invisible string theory. And that song, she's like, isn't it just so pretty to think that all along there was some invisible string tying you to me? And it's this idea that like parts of our lives and sometimes people we love and relationships and things are predestined for us. And so even when we don't know it, there is this string that is attaching us to our destiny and to some of those monumental moments and people that are meant to come into our lives, even if it's just for a season. And I think that's a really beautiful way to think about that. But of course, there are so many decisions looking back that completely changed the direction and course of my life. How do you handle moments of doubt or imposter syndrome, especially in your role as a mentor and coach? So this one, I think, is, I've talked about this before, but like, being unsure if you are capable of something means that you're probably doing something that's new to you and that is somewhat challenging. And that is not inherently a bad thing. Like, I think that's actually a good thing. If you're doing something that's new and that's challenging and it makes you go, I wonder if I'm able to do this perfectly. I wonder if I can execute on this. I wonder if I'm really capable of this. I think that's healthy, you know? And so in my experience, imposter syndrome is not a sign that you are out of alignment or that you're out of your league or that you're doing something that you shouldn't be doing, but it's really like a green light to show you, here's an opportunity for you to grow. It's not this red light of like, stop, retract, don't go here, you're not qualified. It's like, here's an area where you get to lean in and grow. It's a sign that you're outside of your comfort zone or that you're on the edge of your comfort zone, that you're doing something new and challenging. And that's the only way that you are going to grow in your career, in business, in life, is by meeting those edges of your comfort zone. So I think imposter syndrome is a green light. You know, like, imposter syndrome is something that is widely experienced. And there's so much more research now to show that almost everybody feels that at some point in their careers. And I think it's just an example of when we're stepping outside the bounds of what we've always done or the things that we've become really confident in because we feel like we're an expert in it because we have so much experience in it. Once you do something that deviates from that a little bit, you get a little uncomfortable, you know? And you're like, oh my God, like, I don't know. Should I be in this room? Am I capable of this kind of opportunity? Like, can I produce this kind of art? Like, actors, actresses, singers, they experience this all the time when they try new genres or new formats. They're challenging themselves to expand their capacity. And so to me, I'm just like, that's a good thing. The only way to deal with imposter syndrome is to recognize it as that green light for growth and to decide whether you want to grow or you want to shrink and to just keep it moving. What is something that you would like to change or improve about yourself? Oh God. So one thing about me that I don't love is that I rush a lot. I'm often in a hurry. And so I guess I would say I wish that I could take life a little bit slower, or maybe it's just about managing my time better in some aspects so that I'm not always like down to the wire with things and I'm not always rushing. But like I feel rushed sometimes even when it's not necessary. Like even if I don't need to be in a hurry, and I know a lot of people can relate to this. Like my brother is the same way. We always talk about like when people walk slow or when they drive slow, like we don't even need to be in a hurry to be annoyed that everyone else around us is not in a hurry. You know what I mean? But like that's so like why do we, I think it's a form of anxiety, but I've saw this skit of a comedian talking about how he went to therapy and he was describing, you know, when he's on an airplane and he's thinking ahead about where he put his bag so that he can get up at the exact right moment and grab it and not make anyone behind him be inconvenienced for a shred of a second. And he can just be super quick and like get right off. And he's like, oh, the therapist told me that that's anxiety. I'm like, that's anxiety. Like, I didn't know. And so, yeah, I think that's like an expression of my anxiety, is just always kind of feeling like in a rush and being in a hurry. And so yeah, if I could change something about myself, maybe I would be like a type of person that is just able to like slow the fuck down more and like not need everyone else to also be fast all the time. Going along with that is like worrying. I've always worried a lot. And so, I mean, I definitely have anxious tendencies. Like I don't like to say I have anxiety or I'm anxious, but for sure I have anxious tendencies. And I also experience a form of OCD, which I only discovered like a couple of years ago. I didn't know that it was OCD. It's not that I just like started experiencing this a couple of years ago. I've experienced it since I was a kid, but it's called body focused repetitive behavior. And the way that I experience it is where I will like bite the inside of my mouth or the inside of my cheeks unconsciously all the time. Like when I'm thinking hard or I'm rushing or I'm worrying about something, and it's constant. Like it's every day. It's almost all the time. So yeah, if I could change something about myself, I think I would change that. I would, and I've worked on healing that, but it's not working. It's not working yet. not giving up hope though. How do you measure success in your life beyond traditional markers like followers or income? Yeah, I think the older I get, the more that I realize that the biggest representations of success for me are health and happiness. I think if you have the means to create a healthy lifestyle for yourself, then you have created a level of success, right? Because unfortunately, there is a lot of, you know, there's not equal access to things that help us be, and the world is not helping us be healthy. You know, it's kind of hard nowadays to be totally healthy with all of the toxins and antibiotics in meat and pesticides on foods. And like, it's just becoming more and more challenging and more of a privilege to actually be truly healthy and to eat well and to be able to give yourself like these treatments and services that allow you to be in optimal health. And so I do think that being able to afford yourself a healthy life is a form of success, undoubtedly. And obviously happiness is, you know, if you have all the money in the world but you're miserable, like that to me is not, oh, what a successful life. It's like, okay, you've made a lot of money, but like, what now? You know, so health and happiness at the forefront. I also think having the freedom to do something that you love is an expression of success. And for me, that's a big version of success, right? Because if I have to be miserable every day just to be able to pay my bills or go on a vacation once a year, then I don't feel successful. That for me doesn't feel like success. And unfortunately, that's the reality for so many people. And I know that. And so I have so much empathy for, you know, everyone not being able to have access to that. Yeah, I think that's why it makes it a clear marker of success. It's like, wow, you know, what a beautiful thing that you've created. What a privilege to be able to have the freedom to do what you love. And then the last thing for me is time. You know, I think the richest people to me are the ones who are rich in time, because it's the only thing that we can never get back and that we can't make more of, and that we all want more of at the end of our lives is time. So if you have time freedom and you have the ability to do what you want with your time, what you love with your time, then I think you really hit the jackpot of success. When you look back on your life many years from now, what legacy do you hope to have left behind? So this word legacy makes me think of Alex Hormozi, because I've heard him talk about this kind of somewhat like sad and pessimistic idea, but he talks about it's meant to be motivational in the sense of like, no one's gonna care, so like just do it anyways. But he talks about how everyone is more or less forgotten not that long after they die. And I think the example that he gives is the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth. You know, when she passed away, it was this, of course, huge thing because she's an historic matriarch, you know, who reigned for so, so long, has seen so much in history and culture, in politics. And she was obviously a very wealthy, influential, powerful individual, one of the most famous, well-known figures probably in the world. And the example that he gave, because it was like timely, it was like, it's been 6 months since she died. How many times have you thought about her? It was like, we all thought about her, obviously, when that happened and it was all over the news. But then shortly after, like, we just forget. And that was one of the most, like, influential, you know, well-known people. And the point in which he said that was, like, understanding that we're all going to be forgotten and our lives aren't even as significant as we think that they are. So if you're worried about people judging you or whatever, like, just honestly, like, get over it, because, like, no one fucking cares. That was the context in which that was shared. But I think about that when I think about legacy. And so I don't at all believe that, like, I'm, you know, so prestigious and important that I'm going to have this, like, long-lasting legacy left behind. I'm very well aware of the fact that, you know, I'm just a girl. And of course, the people that love me will miss me. But, like, at the same time, we're all going to be forgotten. So in a more humble regard, when I think about legacy, I just hope that people remember the way that I made them feel. And I hope that that's positive. I hope that they remember my heart and how much I really cared, you know, not just about their success or helping them with their businesses or whatever it was that I was doing or whatever, you know, part of their journey I was involved in, but that they remember how much I really did care about their humanness and their happiness and their well-being. You know, everyone that I work with, everyone that comes into my world, the listeners of the podcast, my clients, everyone, like, of course I want to help you create change and I want to help you create and build success and wealth and whatever it is you want to create. But at my core, like, I really just want you to be happy, you know, and I hope that you're well and I hope that you're healthy. And so I hope people remember that part of me and my personality, that I did have a really big heart and that I really did care. I hope that there's people that remember being really activated by my work or inspired to take action on something or to make significant changes in their life because of something that I may have shared at some point. I hope that there's people out there who maybe were able to borrow some of my confidence or some of my ambition or some of my optimism until it became their own, and that rippled out somehow in their life and allowed them to become a better version or create new results and opportunities for themselves. I hope to leave behind a community of women who are better because we existed on earth together at the same time, lifting each other up and sharing our wisdom and breaking old patterns and healing from the inside out for ourselves and also for everyone around us and for those who are going to come after us. Those are the things that I hope for when I think about legacy. And I also hope that I'm able to become a mom and that I have children in the world who love me and are proud of me and just think that I was a good mom and know that I really cared. So yeah, like I said, you guys, I'm having so many thoughts, so many thoughts lately about motherhood. Like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't know the timeline. I know nothing, but obviously I have learned that it is clearly important to me. So we'll see. We'll see where that leads, and only time will tell. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope it was inspiring, uplifting in some way. Maybe you learned something more about me. Maybe you want to take these questions again and use them as, like, little conversation cards and ask your friend or your partner or someone that you want to get into a more deep, vulnerable conversation with. Or maybe you just want to journal on these things for yourself to uncover some of this information. This was a valuable exercise exercise for me, and it helped me, you know, get even more anchored into some of my truths and my mission. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please take a screenshot, share it to your Instagram stories, and tag me so that I can repost you. Also, we so appreciate your ratings and reviews. They always help us out. Give us 5 stars, leave a little sentence below, or list off an episode that you particularly loved so that when people are looking through those reviews, they can kind of see what episodes might be a great starting point. So share one of the ones that you loved. And don't forget that we are doing full video episodes now on YouTube. So if you haven't gone over and subscribed to our YouTube, we will leave the link in the show notes for you guys. Watch the full video episodes on YouTube. You can put me on your TV, you can put me on your laptop, anywhere, and just kind of hang out with me in my little spare bedroom office and watch the podcast instead of just listen. All right, I love you guys. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.